You're listening to a Truly Criminal podcast exclusive. This episode contains themes that some listeners may find distressing. Listener discretion is advised. If you listened to our previous podcast exclusive about the tragic life and death of Star Stowe, you'll know that there was an extremely toxic environment surrounding models and women associated with Playboy magazine. Unfortunately, Star Stowe was not the only Playboy bunny to have her life snatched away by a heinous act of evil. Today's podcast exclusive is about fame, obsession, sex, Hollywood, and murder. It's about the brutal slaying of a pin-up beauty and rising star that inspired countless books, songs, and movies, Dorothy Stratton. Dorothy Stratton was born in Vancouver, Canada on the 28th of February 1960. Her parents, Simon and Nellie Hoogstraten, were originally from Holland, but had immigrated to Canada before Dorothy was conceived, in hopes of finding a better life for themselves. In the 1960s, Vancouver was a growing destination for people from all over the world. It's a beautiful coastal metropolis with growing industries, luscious natural landscapes, and a laid-back and welcoming atmosphere. All of this made it a favourite place for tourists as well as those looking for a fresh start in a new world. Today, Vancouver boasts the largest Chinatown in the whole of Canada and still remains a top destination for tourists and immigrants alike looking to lay down new roots. In 1961, Dorothy's younger brother was born. The young couple with two small children were struggling financially, and arguments were frequent in the Hoogstraten household. 2 years later, when Dorothy was only 3 years old, her father deserted the family, leaving his wife and two small children and never coming back. Dorothy's mother Nellie, who had grown up in an orphanage in Holland, worked extremely hard as a cook in a school cafeteria and as a housekeeper to make ends meet, but still struggled to keep the family's heads above water as a single mother. While Dorothy was still a child, the family situation was made more difficult when her mother fell pregnant again by an employer. Nellie decided to keep the child and, 9 months later, Dorothy's half-sister Louise was born. Now Nellie was a single mother, struggling to raise three young children all on her own and in a new country. The family moved to a tough part of Vancouver and had to rely on social assistance from the government to scrape by. Dorothy said of this time in her life, "My family is important to me. We were brought up through a lot of hard times and we stuck them out together. I've never had a father to support the family, so it's always been my mother." Dorothy's mother strived to improve her children's lives. She saved every penny she earned and, after a while, moved them to a better part of the city. She also found work in a local hospital and began training as a nurse. The tough conditions and daily struggles meant the family grew incredibly close, and Dorothy had a tight bond with both her brother and sister. When Dorothy was 14, she started working after school and on weekends at a Dairy Queen to help support her mother and family. When she wasn't studying or working, she was helping to raise her younger siblings. Louise recollected in 2005, "She took care of me a lot because my mom wasn't around, taught me how to tie my shoes, was there for every school function, sports day, talent day, she was there." In school, Dorothy was popular and remembered by other students at Centennial High School as a sweet and kind person, with a lot of friends. One of Dorothy's classmates, Leslie Buchanan, said years later about her, "I do remember her being friendly but quiet, and always looking good in her seafarer jeans. The picture of Dorothy I have in my mind's eye is of her in the hallway, looking her very beautiful self, and wondering how some girls could have that much going for them." Dorothy rode the bus a long way from her home to the Dairy Queen as much as possible, and proved to be as hard-working as her mom was. She also proved to be very popular with customers. One customer whose eye she caught while working at Dairy Queen would change her life, and tragically, ultimately, end it. When Dorothy was 18 years old and getting ready to graduate from Centennial High School with hopes of becoming a secretary, a tall, handsome man with a mustache wearing a long leather coat parked his black Corvette outside and came in to order an ice cream sundae. He was a 26-year-old small-time hustler and occasional pimp, Paul Snyder. Paul Snyder was born on the 15th of April 1951 in Vancouver's East End to parents David and Evelyn. It is believed that David owned his own business making clothes and accessories, and in the seventh grade, after his parents broke up and his mother left home, Paul quit school to work as a leather cutter in his father's store. However, Paul wasn't content in a small town working in his father's small company. He had big dreams of glitz and glamour, and made the decision from a young age that he was going to make the big time by any means necessary, including using anyone he could to get ahead. Always a slight child, Paul started lifting weights to bulk himself up. He grew his trademark moustache and started dressing flashily in expensive suits, whilst wearing a large gold medallion on a thick chain. He started his own promotion business and was lucky enough to get the chance to promote Pacific National Exhibition auto shows. However, Paul wasn't content with this. He wanted to get rich quickly, so started working in the drugs trade, with a gang of drug dealers from Vancouver going by the name of the Rounder Crowd. Things went bad for Paul quickly, as a Vancouver affiliate recollected. Nobody trusted him that much and he was scared to death of drugs. He finally lost a lot of money to loan sharks, and the Rounder Crowd hung him by his ankles from the 30th floor of a hotel. He had to leave town. Paul fled to Los Angeles, where he hung around in Beverly Hills and allegedly attempted to use his looks to lure young women into sex work for him. After his hustling had attracted law enforcement numerous times, and he'd earned a bad reputation as a wannabe pimp, he ran away from the City of Angels, back to Vancouver, where he began working as a nightclub promoter. He'd only been back in town a short while when he laid his eyes on the stunningly beautiful blonde behind the counter of the Dairy Queen, Dorothy. Paul reportedly whispered to a friend he was with at the time, "That girl could make me a lot of money." Unfortunately, that was how Paul Snyder saw other people, especially women, as mere things to be used to further his own goals or to make him quick, cold cash. He began wooing Dorothy straight away, flattering the small town and innocent girl with praise about her looks, buying her gifts like a topaz ring, and cooking her dinner in his expensive apartment uptown. He used every trick he'd honed in Los Angeles to love-bomb the 18-year-old into dating him. For Dorothy, a young girl with dreams of being a secretary who'd worked as hard as possible to help out her struggling family, the attention the good-looking older man lavished on her must have been quite overwhelming. It wasn't long before she acquiesced and agreed to be his girlfriend. Paul had been an avid reader of Playboy magazine for many years now.
Anybody who doesn't know who Hugh Hefner is probably just got here to this country or is under 6 years of age or something like that. How he did it is a secret apparently all his own, or other people would all be doing it. Anyway, will you welcome the man who did it all and produced the magazine that the whole country starts reading from the middle? Hugh Hefner.
Please welcome Hugh Hefner. Please welcome the Bentley twins and their boyfriend, the founder of Playboy magazine, Mr. Hugh Hefner.
He worshipped Hugh Hefner, the founder of the magazine, and dreamed of attending lavish parties at the Playboy Mansion. He knew he could never get into that world on his own, but now that he had Dorothy, who embodied everything Playboy stood for, he thought he had a great chance. He just needed to coax the shy, inexperienced, and naive Dorothy to pose naked for some photographs for the magazine. Dorothy refused for a long time, but in 1978, when an ad appeared in the pages of Playboy calling for entries to the 25th anniversary Great Playboy Hunt, an annual competition with a large cash prize and the chance to be the anniversary Playmate model, Dorothy finally agreed to pose naked for a photographer friend of Paul's. This decision would propel the girl next door to superstardom. She later said in an interview, "It took him a while to talk me into agreeing to taking some test pictures. I had never taken my clothes off for anyone I didn't know before." Dorothy didn't win the competition, however, she was a finalist and runner-up. But more importantly, she caught the eye of Hugh Hefner. Just a day after the photographs of Dorothy had crossed his desk, Hefner had invited her to the Playboy Mansion and booked her a flight to Los Angeles for a test shoot. It was the first time in her life that she'd left Vancouver, and the first time she'd flown in an aeroplane. She was so nervous she was shaking, and when she saw the Playboy Mansion, she told others she thought it was a castle. The Playboy founder loved Dorothy's innocent aura, sex appeal, and startling blonde hair as soon as he met her. He told a documentary in 2005 that she was luminescent, angelic. She lit up a room. All the corny phrases were true about Dorothy. He immediately asked her to sign a contract to work as a playmate for the magazine. Dorothy said yes, but was worried about what her mother would think, so hadn't told her family what she was doing yet. Dorothy, as well as her family, was very conservative, However, a few months before her photographs would be featured in the magazine, Dorothy sat down with her mother and explained what she was doing. Her mother understood and accepted her daughter's choice. Nellie spoke to a Playboy writer a little later about the conversation. She says, "Mommy, I'm not selling my body. I'm selling my beauty, my looks. And I know my daughter well enough to know what she says is the truth. She's an intelligent girl." Hugh Hefner asked Dorothy to cut her surname down to make it sound more American, to which the rising star agreed, and that was how Dorothy Hoogstraten became Dorothy Stratton. It was around the time of the name change that Dorothy also made the decision to move to Los Angeles full-time. She rented a small but luxurious place near the Santa Monica Freeway and spoke on the telephone to Paul Snyder frequently. She loved him and she believed that her newfound fame was all thanks to him, which was an idea that Paul enforced and encouraged every time they spoke. He soon followed Dorothy out to Los Angeles, believing that she would be his meal ticket into Hugh Hefner's inner circle. However, Hefner, as well as the other Playboy bunnies at the mansion, were repulsed by Paul and the way he behaved. Hefner told a documentary crew years later, "Dorothy made this incredible impression. Everybody loved her, and almost everyone was universally put off by Paul. He was a wheeler dealer, a very obvious one." Other Playboy bunnies also made complaints about Paul trying to cheat on Dorothy while he was in the mansion. Paul was becoming increasingly jealous over the extended time Dorothy was spending with Hefner in the Playboy mansion, so as a way of committing her to him, he asked her to marry him. Hefner, as well as her friends and family, attempted to talk her out of going through with the wedding, but she felt obligated to, as this was the man who had swooped her up out of the Dairy Queen and set her on the path to fame. She said yes, and they were married on the 1st of June 1979 in a quick ceremony at the Silver Bell Chapel in Las Vegas. In August of that same year, Dorothy was made Playmate of the Month, a monumental achievement for the young model that rocketed her into nationwide celebrity. She stole the heart of every Playboy reader across America. She was also starting to get noticed by talent scouts for movies and television. Dorothy's star was rising, and Paul hung on to his wife, using her name and her beauty to try and get himself into an upper class of people who only saw him as a classless, rough-around-the-edges pimp. He attempted to put together some of his own businesses, such as making and marketing his own exercise benches, a business venture which failed like most of his other ideas, and Dorothy carried him financially while they lived together in Los Angeles. The more success Dorothy garnered, the more controlling Paul became. He demanded to know where she was and who she was with at all times, and flew into jealous rages often. By late 1979, and still at the tender age of 19, Dorothy had started to find some acting roles on television and in the movies. Just small parts in the beginning, but she seemed to capture the hearts and minds of everyone who saw her, and the smaller parts began to progress into larger roles. Her first major role was in the film Skate Town USA, a comedy film directed by William A. Levy about a roller disco competition where two rivals become friends. The movie was a flop at the box office, but it brought Dorothy to the attention of some bigger movie directors, like Peter Bogdanovich. Peter met Dorothy at a house party in Beverly Hills and said he was interested in casting her in a movie. He gave her his business card, but she never called. This could have been due to the fact that she was with Paul Snyder at the time, and he may have taken the card away from her in one of his jealous rages. However, serendipity would bring Peter Bogdanovich and Dorothy Stratton together again when they met at a party hosted by Hefner at the Playboy Mansion. Peter was in pre-production of the madcap detective movie They All Laughed, starring Hollywood icon Audrey Hepburn. And as he sat talking to Dorothy on the stairs of the Playboy Mansion, he knew in his heart that he wanted her to star in the new film. He asked her to come to the studio and audition, and Dorothy, overjoyed with the prospect of working alongside a movie legend like Audrey Hepburn, agreed straight away. The future seemed impossibly bright for the once small-town girl, and as the year 1980 came around, things were going to get even better. That year, Hefner named Dorothy as Playmate of the Year, and she was awarded a Jaguar sports car, a fur coat worth $65,000, a check for $25,000, and she also made the cover of Playboy magazines across the globe. Furthermore, before travelling cross-country with Playboy on a promotional tour, Dorothy made an appearance on the popular television talk show, The Late Show with Johnny Carson.
And this is the result. Yesterday she was named Playmate of the Year. Mm. So we thought we would save the dessert to last.
We sure do. Tonight.
Would you welcome Dorothy Stratton? By golly, that's you. You really are a lovely young lady.
Thank you.
I saw you. You were on the news last night, I think, on the local newscast. Did you know, how long before did you know that you were selected as Playmate of the Year?
Well, we started shooting the issue sometime in October of 1979.
Right.
And we finished in March of 1980.
Right. Well, now, what did you do in Vancouver? Were you a professional model at all before?
No, I just graduated from high school when I was approached by Playboy, and I was working in a telephone company. I was a clerk typist.
You're putting me on.
No, I worked there just 6 weeks before they carried me away.
That was good. Good move. The only good thing that ever came out of the telephone company.
Somebody said, you know, what's his business of, what's his business of working in an ice cream stand?
I worked there for 4 years, part-time while I was going through high school.
Right.
And one day this gentleman walked in with this gorgeous blonde, this long fur coat, and
right.
I had him sitting at, waiting on him at the Dairy Queen, two little pigtails and a little red smock on, and I said, can I help you? And he says, what's your name?
Good.
And it happened from there.
It's like something you would hear in a movie, right?
Yeah.
And they said, come to Hollywood. And
uh-huh.
Were you a little reluctant? Did you think maybe it was some kind of a trick or something?
Oh, well, when I was being asked if I would, Playboy was looking for a 25th anniversary girl then, so it was
right.
a big contest. And when I was asked if I would pose for the magazine, I couldn't talk to my mother about it because she was in Europe, so I had to make the decision on my own. And my boyfriend, who is my husband now, said that it was the best thing for me to do, and so after about 3 weeks, I finally decided I would.
Yeah.
I think, by the way, that Playboy has their girls pose
right.
Than a lot of the other magazines. And the other magazines definitely leave nothing to the imagination.
Right. Well, you're very pretty. I mean, sometimes, you know, you see photographs and the girl doesn't look as pretty, and then you walk out, and you're in person as pretty as your photographs.
Oh, thank you.
It was the biggest chat show of its time, and the interview was huge and a first for a Playboy model. As Dorothy's fame continued to grow, Paul was becoming increasingly isolated and hostile. He was barred from entering the Playboy mansion because Hefner didn't want him around. Paul became obsessed with the idea that Hefner was attempting to steal Dorothy away from him, which made him even more possessive. In the following months, he increased his efforts of keeping tabs on where Dorothy was and who she was with at all times of the day and night. Dorothy tried her best to appease Paul and soothe his concerns, but she was soon starting to feel trapped and suffocated by his actions. She didn't know what she should do and felt incredibly conflicted. Paul insisted on being her personal chauffeur and also designated himself as her personal acting coach, even though he couldn't act at all. Hefner and Dorothy's friends in the Playboy Mansion were also now advising her to cut him off as soon as possible because they too were becoming concerned with his possessive and erratic behaviour. After the whirlwind of becoming Playmate of the Year, more amazing news soon followed. Peter Bogdanovich called Dorothy to tell her she'd gotten the part alongside Audrey Hepburn in his new movie They All Laughed. It was the big break that Dorothy had been waiting for, and on the 22nd of March 1980, Dorothy flew out to New York City to begin filming. Paul had insisted on accompanying her, but when Dorothy told him it was a closed set for actors and staff only, he stayed behind in their LA apartment, ruminating on his perceived loss of control over his wife. While filming was underway, Peter and Dorothy seemed inseparable, almost as though they had found something in the other that they badly needed and craved. Dorothy was upset over her relationship with Paul, and Peter was also licking his wounds after a failed romance. A deep relationship soon blossomed between the two of them. Peter later recalled how their relationship began. We started seeing each other more often. I mean, always talking about doing the picture, and I just liked talking with her, and she was so smart. At some point, we were sitting on a couch in my living room. I remember she just put her head on my shoulder, and she was sad about something. I said, let's go down to the beach and go for a walk. We were walking in the sand for quite a while, and suddenly we both just turned to each other, and we kissed each other. It blew me away, and that was the beginning. And we talked about doing anything else, and she said, I can't, because I have to go back to my husband, and I can't do anything but this, meaning kiss. So that's all we did for about a month. Despite Dorothy and Peter trying their best to avoid it, the pair fell in love and started an affair, even living together in Peter's hotel during filming. Peter later recalled, what can you do to stop a feeling? Can you just crush it in your hand? And I was thinking that, you know? This girl is married and I'm madly in love with her, and she's in love with me. What are we going to do? Dorothy was torn. She wanted to start a new life with Peter, but felt obligated to the man she had been with since she was 18 years old and working behind the counter of the Dairy Queen. She flew back from New York to finish things with Paul, but couldn't. Paul talked Dorothy into taking him with her on a trip back to Vancouver for her mother's wedding. However, unbeknownst to Dorothy, Paul had booked appearances for her at his associates' club. He then pressurized her into attending the events and pocketed all of the appearance fees. On the flight back to the States, the couple argued, and Dorothy, in tears and exasperated, offered to quit her modeling and acting career and return to Canada with Paul. Paul refused and told her she was making too much money to quit now. Dorothy then asked him to give her more freedom in the relationship, which resulted in violent quarrels between the pair. Dorothy, now exhausted by Paul and in love with Peter, desperately wanted to end things with him, but his hold over her was too strong. She continued to telephone and write postcards to Peter every day, insisting that she was going to break things off with Paul, but she felt compelled to help him financially and wanted to help him become stable after they separated. Dorothy was such a kind-hearted person that even after everything Paul had put her through, she still hoped to remain friends with him. What she didn't realize, however, was the ruthless extent to which Paul would go to keep his hold over her and her career. By this time, Paul, engulfed by jealousy and intuitions that Dorothy was having an affair with Peter, and further bolstered by the discovery of love letters and poems from the film director, hired a private detective named Goldstein to follow Dorothy while she was in New York, working on the film to document any evidence of infidelity. After the first anniversary of their Las Vegas wedding, Dorothy wrote a letter from New York to Paul in California, stating that she wished to separate from him personally and financially. Paul reportedly reacted with rage to the correspondence, and after being unable to get Dorothy on the telephone or be able to contact her, he emptied the couple's joint bank accounts for every last cent. He ordered the private detective to step up his efforts and catch Dorothy cheating, so he could use it as a weapon against her in the courts if she tried to divorce him. He then spent the next few weeks drinking heavily and partying with an ex-girlfriend, until the money was all gone. Living in the States without the proper work permits or visas, Paul had no legal revenues to earn his own cash, so he began selling Dorothy's belongings that she had left behind in their apartment, including the fur coat and the Jaguar sports car. Dorothy, unaware of what was happening to her belongings back in California, finished the filming of her first major motion picture and flew with Peter Bogdanovich to London for a 10-day getaway. Peter was now completely head over heels in love with Dorothy. He would say later that he had wanted to marry her. When the pair came back to LA, Dorothy moved in with Peter into his Bel Air mansion. It had been months since she had met her estranged husband, and with Peter's support, she finally telephoned Paul to tell him she wanted a divorce. Paul seemed to take the news relatively well and asked to meet Dorothy later on the 8th of August to talk things over. Dorothy agreed, and on that Wednesday, she went to her old apartment to see Paul. Peter was incredibly concerned about the meeting. He felt Paul was unstable and was worried about Dorothy meeting him on her own, but she insisted that Paul would never hurt her. He could be a little erratic and strange at times, but he wasn't a violent person, she reassured him. The meeting was an emotional one. Paul was now living with two new women. One was his ex-girlfriend, and the other woman was someone he was trying to get work modelling at Playboy. Paul asked the women to leave, and he and Dorothy sat at the dining table to hash things out. They both cried. Paul begged and pleaded for Dorothy to come back, but when she confessed her deep love for the movie director, Peter, Paul fell quiet, and the topic changed to money. Paul felt he was owed some kind of compensation. He made Dorothy a star, not Hefner, not Peter, but him, Paul Snyder. Just wanting to escape and be free to live her life, Dorothy agreed to a large cash settlement that she would pay Paul in installments through her lawyer. With the compensation agreed and the final conclusion of their relationship agreed upon too, the pair appeared to separate that day on relatively good terms, and Dorothy thought she would never see Paul again. Unfortunately, it would not be the last time they met. The next time, he would be forcing her to undress at gunpoint. 6 days later, on the morning of August 14th, Dorothy was relaxing in the Bel Air mansion with her 12-year-old sister Louise, who was visiting the couple at the time, when the telephone rang. It was Paul Snyder. He told Dorothy he needed some cash, some of the settlement early, and asked if she could bring it over to him at their apartment. Always kind, understanding and supportive, Dorothy said she would take him $1,100. It was all the cash she had at the time. She kissed her younger sister goodbye and told her not to tell Peter where she had gone, because he would only worry about her. She said that she would be back at around 2 in the afternoon, got into her car and drove away. Unbeknownst to Dorothy, Paul had spent the last 5 days desperately attempting to get his hands on a gun. He tried to persuade his private investigator into purchasing him a machine gun, telling him he needed it for home protection. When the private investigator outright refused, Paul enlisted the help of the few friends he had in attempts to buy a gun, telling them he was considering taking up hunting. When all attempts failed, Paul finally purchased a 12-gauge pump-action shotgun from a private seller he'd found in the back of the classified section of a local newspaper. What exactly transpired and what was said between the pair when Dorothy turned up to the apartment will always remain a mystery. However, what is known for a fact is that some point soon after her arrival, Paul forced Dorothy into the bedroom at gunpoint, sexually assaulted her on the bed, and then shot her in the face at close range. He then turned the gun on himself. The bodies wouldn't be discovered until 11 p.m. that night, when Paul's new flatmates opened the bedroom door to check on the pair after a concerned telephone from the private investigator, who hadn't spoken to Paul all day despite plans to do so. The PI believed that Paul may be suicidal and was worried about him. Upon hearing about the grisly scene of the murder-suicide, the PI called Hugh Hefner, who in turn called Peter at his Bel Air home. Peter recollected that awful evening in an interview on the television network TNT. "Well, she said she'd be back at around 2, and when it got to be 4, we were kind of worried, and we suffered through that day because Louise knew where she had gone and didn't tell me until it was 6, and I thought, shit, we just got more and more worried, didn't know what to do about it. And finally, at around 11, the phone rings and I answer it. It was Hefner. 'Hi, Hef, how you doing? Haven't you heard?' 'Heard what?' 'Oh, God,' he said. This was the hardest moment of my life. He said 2 words. 'Dorothy's dead.' Peter needed to be administered sedatives by a doctor after hearing the news. He was beyond devastated and blamed himself for not being there to protect the person he loved so deeply. He said, 'They gave me 2 Valium. I didn't speak to anybody. I was a complete basket case. I couldn't deal with anything. I didn't see my kids, my sister, nobody. I just lay on the bed and hitting my hand against the wall for 2 days. At the time of her murder, Dorothy was just 20 years old. She had her whole life ahead of her and so much potential to be a Hollywood great. She wasn't just beautiful on the outside, she was truly beautiful on the inside too. And it was this trusting and kind nature that was used to take her life in the end. Hugh Hefner summed up the reasons for Dorothy's murder when he told the press after the killing. "There is still a great tendency for this thing to fall into the classic cliche of small-town girl comes to Playboy, comes to Hollywood, life in the fast lane. That is not really what happened. A very sick guy saw his meal ticket and his connection to power, whatever, slipping away. And it was that made him kill her." In August 1984, 4 years after her murder, Peter Bogdanovich released a biography on Dorothy, their relationship, and her slaying. In the book titled The Killing of a Unicorn, Peter made numerous allegations about Hugh Hefner, whom he accused of raping Dorothy after her first ever Playboy shoot when she was only 18 years old. Peter also revealed that the only reason Dorothy married Paul Snyder was to try and keep Hefner from raping her again. These were all allegations that Hefner strongly denied. Dorothy's younger sister Louise also spoke out against Hefner and attempted to sue him in 1985. Peter would later go on to marry Louise, who had been staying with the couple on the day of Dorothy's murder. Peter said of the unusual matchup, "I didn't fall in love with Louise because she was like Dorothy, although she is in certain ways, and she's as kind and as thoughtful and self-effacing, but I just got along with her, and she was funny." Dorothy was cremated and her ashes were interred at Westwood Village Memorial Park Cemetery in LA. Her grave marker reads, "If people bring so much courage to this world, the world has to kill them, to break them, so of course it kills them. It kills the very good and the very gentle and the very brave impartially. If you are none of these, you can be sure it will kill you too, but there will be no special hurry."
Are you really shy, sensitive, and romantic?
Yes, I'm getting over my shyness fast. But I am very sensitive and I'm very romantic.
That's the type of girl a lot of men fantasize about. A lot of men like the girl next door.
I mean, are you the girl next door? Because it seems to me that I've never lived next door to anyone who looked like you.
Well, when I came from the town that I came from, I lived with my family still. I just graduated from high school. I worked in a Dairy Queen for 4 years wearing pigtails and no makeup.
Whose playmate are you supposed to be? when you're the playmate of the month?
I think I'm supposed to be the playmate, whoever chooses me as their fantasy.
Dorothy Stratton was a star in every sense of the word. She lived her life with kindness and love and had a major impact on everyone she met. The good words and amazing stories that people have about her are a true testament to her nature, and she will never, ever be forgotten.